From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour goes back to when you were a high school junior and senior. Do you remember the FAFSA forms? Do you remember financial aid? Do you remember trying to figure out what you were eligible for and what you weren't? Maybe wading through the forms and trying to figure all of that out. It can be a daunting process for students. Now imagine you're someone who has had no one in your family go to college. Imagine just going through that, sort of feeling like you're on your own, or even maybe with a single parent trying to help you figure all of that out. Well, this hour, we're talking FAFSA. We're talking financial aid. We're talking about the possible value and what you and maybe someone you know needs to know about all of this. Before I welcome my guests, I want to tell you two things. Our second hour today, we're talking migraine today. Some of our audience members had emailed. We already have a lot of questions from the audience about that, and they thought it was the first hour. It's the second, and the host is having a migraine right now. So if I'm really off my game this hour, I would like to apologize in advance. But I'm going to try to hold it together because that's what we're going to do here on Connections. Let me welcome my guests, and it starts with the Executive Director of the Rochester Education Foundation. It's Pat Brouse, and Pat, nice to have you back.
Great to be here. Thanks, Evan.
We're right in the middle of FAFSA Fest. We'll be talking about that in just a second. Let me introduce the rest of the panel first. Kim McKenzie Mabry is the Interim Dean of Academic Services and Affirmative Action Coordinator for MCC and also a Rochester Education Foundation board member. Kim, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Gabe Itrabides is here, Assistant Director of the Access Opportunity Programs at SUNY Geneseo and member of the Rochester College Access Network. Gabe, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And Cortez Jones is here, a graduate of the Rochester City School District and now a branch manager for ESL Federal Credit Union. Hi, Cortez.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. You graduated from RCSD when?
2004 from East High School.
2004. And do you remember going through that process?
I sure do.
Yeah.
2003 it would have been for me.
Most fun you've ever had in your life?
It was fun. It was on paper.
Yeah. Well, I don't think a whole lot of people say FAFSA is fun, but going through that process, what were the considerations that you had, if you can take us back to that?
Sure. Well, you just want to be very careful and very meticulous about how you complete the process. It's very important. Accuracy in those forms are very important. When you have questions, don't guess. Reach out for help. I don't have all the answers for the FAFSA, nor do any of my cohorts right now, but there are folks who are stationed in the facilities to help facilitate any, you know, questions that you might have. So if you're unsure about any piece of the process, please reach out and make sure that your form will be accurate when it's completed.
Did you need help?
I sure did. And I went to the college counselor at the time, and she helped me with various pieces of the form. I was able to go back and engage my mother, who had a piece to do in the completion of the FAFSA. So that there's the point right there, you know, reach out for help. Those folks are in the schools.
All right, so let me bring in Pat just to make sure we know exactly what's happening this month, because it's already started. It's the 2016 FAFSA Fest, and you've got events, well, really, I say all month into March, right, Pat?
Yes, we have six events where high school seniors and a parent can get free professional help filling out the financial aid form and submitting it.
And you've got events coming up. The next one is Saturday?
Yes, indeed.
All right, tell us about that.
Well, our event on Saturday is at Sully Branch Library, and what we do is you come with your parents' tax data from the year before, and you basically we will work with you, so you fill out the form, you submit the form, we have refreshments, we actually have pizza. Our goal is to make it kind of a friendly, nice experience. And at the end of the day, you will have that form submitted, which is incredibly important.
That's noon to 3 at Sully Branch on Saturday. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And then if people want to see the rest of the schedule of events for FAFSA Fest, getting information, they can do that where?
They can go to our rochestercan.org website and look up FAFSA Fest. And you will see all the information there. We have locations all around the city, and we hope to see a lot of people there.
I'm just already reading some Twitter comments, and there's a lot of emotion about FAFSA. A lot of people have strong opinions, you know, sort of both ways here. Nick writes, why would anyone ask if this is worth it? I have a degree now, don't I? Anyone who says the hours of paperwork or amount of time preparing for FAFSA isn't worth it is looking for reasons not to try. Pat, what do you make of that comment?
Oh, that's an interesting point. I think Well, we don't see the people who show up to these events aren't making excuses. A lot of them are saying, we really need this help. This is a hard process for us. In fact, last year, there were a young woman showed up with a friend, and the friend said it had taken her 6 hours to fill out the form the year before. And she was flabbergasted that it only took an hour and a half. It's really hard for some people. So I don't hear the excuses so much as I hear it's just a barrier.
I took Nick's comment to say, whatever it's going to take you to do it, do it, because of what it could lead to. Maybe it's 90 minutes, like you said. Maybe it's 6 hours. But the end result might be help for your future.
Well, absolutely. And what we hear, and we have some folks on the panel in higher education, is some of the really scholarships can be first come, first serve sometimes. And it is very, very important to get those forms in on time.
Okay. And then on the other side of this, you know, Laura writes, hated FAFSA. Government telling me I'm rich was a joke. You know, so, and I heard from some parents this morning. Let me read a comment from a parent who sent me a note this morning just saying, the FAFSA system seems to me as a parent so random. Our daughter applied, got no help, ended up with big loans, and we still don't know why. Just a comment from a frustrated mom. So, Pat?
Yeah, I think that's a great, I think that we have a couple of different situations here. One of them is the very high cost of higher education in our country. And I think the FAFSA system is a way of basically they document your family income. And for many people, even if you don't qualify for aid, it's still a huge hardship to pay for college. And I think that's a problem.
Okay. So before I turn to the other panel members here, FAFSA Fest is specifically aimed at who? What's the mission?
Well, our focus is Rochester City kids, but we welcome anyone. And last year, we got kids from all over the county.
Okay. So you don't have to be a Rochester parent or a Rochester student.
No.
Okay. So let me bring in the folks from higher education then to kind of help us understand, well, I think some of these questions that we're already hearing about from our listeners. And by the way, if you want to call the program with a comment or a question on FAFSA, the process, et cetera, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, if you are right here in Rochester. I've been reading some of your comments at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and we'll take your emails as well. Kim, who is the Interim Dean of Academic Services and Affirmative Action Coordinator for MCC and a Rochester Education Foundation board member. Kim, I'm sure you get sort of the same range of comments from parents and from students. Some very frustrated that the form takes a while to figure out. I talked to a student last week who said, I don't understand why some of the questions even get asked. Some of it feels irrelevant. You know, so for those who feel dispirited by the process, what's your message to them?
I think, again, anything that's worth it might take some time. So we just want students to be committed to completing the forms. At MCC, we have folks that are there to help students understand the questions, why the questions are being asked the way that they are. And I agree. I think that there's more barriers to completing the form. For some of our students we experience, they've been disconnected from their parents for quite some time, but the parents' W-2s are part of the process. They have to bring in those tax forms. And so sometimes there's a challenge for students there. But again, talking with a counselor at any institution, especially at the FAFSA events, we'll have lots of experts there. They can help you to work through those challenges, see if there's any other options in completing that type of information required on the form. And in terms of the parent who, you know, said that their daughter didn't qualify for any aid, just because they might not qualify for TAP or Pell at one of the local institutions here, they still might qualify for scholarships. So it's still important to complete the FAFSA form, because at MCC, we're still using that information to help determine students who might be scholarship eligible.
Okay. And so, and again, back to the form, if some of the questions feel like they're not relevant, you're saying that there is a purpose?
There is a purpose. There is a reason why the government or the state are asking those questions.
Okay. Gabe, agree?
I completely agree. I think the number one answer I tell students and family members is just do it. Just like the Nike slogan, it really doesn't take too much time, especially with an event like FAFSA Fest, which really guides the students really. And they've been working and training the people who will be there guiding these people, these families, and filling out this information. And I think part of it is the word barrier. Another one is the word fear. And then sometimes, and I say fear because I remember just hearing my mother when I was going into the college process, just the unknown for her. The college experience was brand new for her because of me. And I remember just every little step brought up a big question, a big question, a big question. It started to become, these questions became bricks. And slowly those bricks was just adding up, going up the wall. And if it wasn't for my college counselor, Chris Farmer, at the time, I don't think I would have even applied.
Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to high school?
I'm from New York City. I went to a small high school called St. Agnes Boys High School.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you don't think without that help you would have even gone through that?
Oh, no. I was looking at the military, and I think that was my option, because that was the option for a couple of my other family members, and it was a good option. But at the same time, it's what was perceived as the only viable option. And we had the right people to really break down those barriers for me.
All right, but let me kind of push back a little.
Sure.
And try to represent the parents who are feeling that frustration. Mm-hmm. And maybe felt the way you did. Mm-hmm. Which is, if you literally have some families deciding this process is too much, mm-hmm. I can't do it, like you said, it's sort of brick by brick until you feel like that's a wall we can't get over, mm-hmm. shouldn't we change it? Does it have to be the way it is?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one. I wish we had one of our directors of financial aid here. But at the same time, I think sometimes people ask so many questions that it makes the process that much more complex. Sort of the family member that was talked about earlier last year, that it took her 6 hours to complete a FAFSA. I remember being at one of the FAFSA Fest events last year, and we had families come in, and within an hour,
yes,
they'd be out. And that was it. And they didn't have to look at it again until they found out what their award would be.
Okay. Pat, what do you say to just the question on whether, should we change it? I mean, is it too much of a, does it discourage too many families?
Well, there is pressure nationally to make it simpler. I think it's unfortunate when government forms create these barriers, but I can't think of a government form that isn't complex.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't want anybody to think that Pat's, you know, making the decisions on how complex or not the forms are. Is there an advantage to that number of sort of questions and the way the forms are? Does that at least help the deciders sift through, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's a really good question. I think government forms are unnaturally and ridiculously complex. We have a lot of people who aren't who have not been in school for many, many years. And I think often it does create barriers. I think behind our FAFSA Fest events, we really are dealing with the FAFSA as it is and trying to remove the barriers around filling it out.
Okay. And again, if you want to weigh in on that, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Kim, where did you go to school, by the way? Are you from around here?
I am. So I graduated from East in 1993.
Okay.
I went to MCC, completed my studies there, and continued on.
Do you remember the process as well?
I do. I do remember the process, and it was paper back mm-hmm. then, and I remember starting to fill out the paper at home, my mother helping me as much as she could. I was accepted into EOP, and I remember my EOP counselors helping me to complete that form.
Okay. And the paper forms,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Lots of paper.
Lots of paper. Do you remember how much? Was it daunting?
I remember it being daunting. Like, I remember all these years, especially getting back into working into higher education, always thinking, wow, the FAFSA. You know, it is. And, you know, and I'm a mother of a daughter who recently went and completed MCC. And even as a parent who's gone through it, as a student who's gone through it with other students completing FAFSA and other parents, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I think sometimes it's a lot just because it's the unknown. We don't know what some of the questions mean. We don't know why they're asking these personal questions. And for some families, it's evading. And so it's just really helping to explain what the questions mean, why the information is needed. And then in the very end, it's just to support that student in completing their education.
What did your mom think of the process? What did she think of the forms?
You know, just like much of higher ed, it's a lot. It's a lot for parents. I was a first-generation college student, and so my mother hadn't gone through that. No one in her family had gone through it at that particular point in time.
As a first generation, then, what else did it mean to you? When you're looking at those forms and you're thinking, no one's gone through this, I'd be the first in the family,
mm-hmm.
does that change the consideration for you at all?
It does. I think for some of us, it's the push to continue to get over that barrier and to make sure the forms get done, because it's the first, and for many of us, the only option there for changing the dynamics of our lives and our families' lives.
Now, at this table, I don't know if we have other first-generation folks here, but I just kind of want to ask the rest of our panel to weigh in. Gabe, for you?
First generation.
Mm-hmm. What was the consideration for you like that? I mean, because again, mm-hmm. you're starting to think there's too much of a wall here. It's not going to be me.
For me, I think I went from the high school I went to, almost everyone, or at least I felt like everyone was a first generation student. So the big one for me was I looked at the price tag of the colleges, and then I just stopped looking. And
you're gonna give up?
I almost gave up.
Yeah.
I really did. And I think it was just, you know, coming from a household where mom made $11,000 and one of the cheaper options, especially because I wanted to get away from New York City for a little while, was too expensive. So you just stop looking. But then what helps is being proactive and asking some questions. We definitely had some alumni of the high school who came down and said, it's not as bad as you thought it might be. It's more affordable. And I too went through HEOP, which is EOP at the private institutions, and just seeing all the options that became available when I started to become more curious about it was what really helped.
Okay, well, let's ask Cortez then. Same kind of question. For you and your family, were you first?
First generation, although I was very connected with folks who had gone through the process. Mm-hmm. So I was able to sort of lean on them for some advice and some of the outcomes that they experienced after filling out the FAFSA and getting awards if they had it. The way I approached it was, it's part of the process. I wanted to go to college. I knew that I was going to go to college. This was a part of the process. You know, so I think there are two things then, and I think there are two things that are going on now. Yes, it's a part of the process, and the other piece being, yes, it could be cumbersome at times, but I don't think that that's an excuse necessarily. I think at this particular point, if you want to go to college, if you've made the decision as a family that you have a student in the home that will be attending college, this is just a part of the process, just like writing that essay was a part mm-hmm. of the process. I went through an interview process. There were a lot of things that I had to go through to enter into college, and this was just one of those pieces. I think if you look at all of those pieces, there's an argument to be made that the entire process is cumbersome, and I think that's a separate battle, but just treat each part of the process as it is, and I think you'll reach your designated outcome.
We're talking to Cortez Jones, who's a Rochester graduate and now a branch manager for ESL Federal Credit Union. So for some of us, doing an in-person interview, no problem. For some of us, it's like the last thing we want to do. For some of us, writing an essay, no problem. For some of us, we do not want to write essays. You know, so every part of this is going to have its sort of strengths and weaknesses. For you, what was the part that you dreaded the most?
The part that I dreaded the most was the writing piece, because the writing piece had so many constraints to it. I like to talk. I like to write. It's very hard for me to get to the point using very few little words. I think when I could sit in front of someone and have a conversation, I think the outcome, at least what I perceive it to be, is typically better. I think I'm a good writer, but if I had to pick, I think I would choose an in-face interview over the writing piece.
Now, forgive the ignorance of the host here. How much has changed? Is it 2003 for you is when you were going through that, right?
Absolutely. 2003, 2004, yeah.
Okay, so Pat, how much has changed with the FAFSA application, for example, in terms of what they have to do?
You know, I really can't answer that. Maybe somebody else on the panel knows.
And is it roughly the same?
I think the initial process, maybe just gathering that information, is probably the biggest barrier. I would say I too went through the paper process, mm-hmm. and renewing that every year, the paper process was so much more cumbersome. And now it's automated. You know, from year to year to year, it actually becomes easier, I think, in some ways, just because the information you put in there last year, it's right there in front of you on a computer screen. But back then, you know, we didn't have Google. So we didn't have, you know, some of the websites that would have the frequently asked questions available to you. So it was a little harder, but we did have our counselors who worked with us. And now a lot of people, and sort of one of the issues with the internet, is sometimes people look into it and take that piece of literature on there as, that's it, this is my only option. And in reality, it's just counselors and directors of financial aid and financial aid departments, they just know so much more that, and I look at FAFSA all the time, and I still can't explain it perfectly to anyone, but I know the financial aid department can. So it's changed.
Well, Aaron writes to the program and says, regarding FAFSA, it's important to remember that to apply for a student loan, the FAFSA form must be submitted. Yes?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, so again, for anybody who doesn't really kind of want to go through the process, it sounds like there's a lot more than just, that one direct piece of financial aid, federal aid. So Aaron, thanks for that reminder and email. And let's see here. I've got the phone starting to ring. Let me just grab a couple of emails as well here. Natalie writes, I was a single mom living in public housing on assistance, decided that the best decision was to go back to college. I filled out my FAFSA, though, and got nothing. And now I'm worried because I'm in tens of thousands of dollars in debt. What did I do wrong? Unfortunately, Natalie, I know our panelists, since they don't know exactly your case, I don't think they're going to be able to answer it directly here. But any general thoughts for someone like Natalie who's frustrated? Now she's got tens of thousands of dollars in debt and kind of thought, I'd be perfect to get aid? What would you say, Kim?
I just think it's really important that anyone applying for aid, whether it's for purposes of TAP or PAL or for student loans or for even scholarships, is develop a close relationship with the financial aid experts at your college, because there's thousands of students, you know. So, for instance, at MCC, we have thousands of students who go through that process every year, and sometimes they don't see things without a student bringing it to their attention, because things are just being processed and they're just processing the paperwork. But if you develop a relationship with someone in that office, they can help to go through detail by detail to make sure that you're not going to put yourself in a bad situation when you finish school.
All right. Eric writes to us on Twitter and says, Evan, by 2008 and later, online part of the FAFSA had no writing. I'm amazed that was ever part of it. Sorry, Cortez. You were just you came of age at a different time, so I guess.
yeah. And let me clarify that. You know, the FAFSA did not have a writing or interview component to it. I was talking about the entire process
the loans,
to go through.
Sure, loans, interviewing, college, et cetera.
I get you.
Any other thoughts? But before I get to the phones for Natalie, go ahead.
Well,
Pat.
I have a thought, which is one of the big changes since the forms have to be filed on a computer now. We have many, many families. They have phones, but they may not have a laptop. They may not have a desktop. And so that becomes another barrier, is the technology, which makes it much easier if you have it. But if you don't, so, you know, again, at our FAFSA Fest events, we have all those computers.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really glad you bring up that point, mm-hmm. because we talked on Friday in this program about the future of public libraries. And it's easy to take for granted. Those of us who have internet at home, I mean, it's just you sort of take it for granted. A quarter of the households in this country don't have internet, and we just take that for granted. So a very good point for Pat, from Pat there. And so FAFSA Fest, a great resource for families that are looking for help in many different ways. Let me grab the first phone call, and this is Beth in Brighton. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi, Evan. I just want to say that I didn't grow up in New York. I didn't go to school in New York. I went to school in St. Louis and then Boston. So I think some of these terminologies really need to be explained to those of us who don't understand FAFSA, et cetera, et cetera. It would be really helpful for those of us who don't understand the terminology or what you're all talking about, because it doesn't mean anything to me.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you for your help.
Yes.
Really appreciate your program.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for the phone call. So FAFSA stands for, Pat?
Have it right in front of you.
The Federal Free Application for Federal Student Aid. I always say FAFSA as if it's just one word and everybody knows what it means.
Right.
Free Application for Federal Student Aid. Any other thoughts there for Beth there, just on understanding it?
Well, I've found higher education, there's so many acronyms and abbreviations, and I understand exactly what she's talking about.
Yes. So Beth, Free Application for Federal Student Aid, FAFSA, FAFSA. There you go. And so, yes, and it doesn't cover every scholarship or every possible award, but it is certainly an important piece for students. And as we heard from Aaron by email, just to remind us, if you want to get a federal loan, you need to fill out a FAFSA form as well. Let me get another phone call. This is Trudy in Rochester. Go ahead, Trudy.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I do not understand, being from Germany, why universities are not free in this country. You know, students have to take out these tremendous loans and cannot pay and pay so long. In Germany, you can study free if you are able. But, you know, to me, it's more important to have an educated country where everybody knows their jobs, where, you know, here they have to struggle. I don't think it's, they say it's socialism. No, it's not socialism. You know, it's giving these kids, you know, free education. This should be done in this country. We're backwards.
Trudy, can I ask you a quick question before I let you go?
Yes.
Every country is a little different. In Germany, like you said, free education for students, but I assume that means you still have to, if you're wanted higher education, still have to apply and be accepted based on certain credentials and criteria, yes?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, you have to be able, but, you know, you have the possibility. And, you know, I travel forth and back. My family lives over there. And, you know, you notice that in people, they're educated, you know, because they have this, they can go to free schools. And to me, it's very important.
Trudy, thanks for the phone call. And her point is really a whole other hour discussion on the mm-hmm. program. But, mm-hmm. you know, I want to respect the phone call and at least ask our guests there, because we're talking about FAFSA Fest, the Rochester College Access Network presenting FAFSA Fest that just got started. And there are a number of events to help students and families know how to make sure they are getting those forms in correctly to get the help that might get them into higher education. Trudy is saying that's great, but no more FAFSA Fest, no more paying for higher education. I know it's a separate discussion, but Cortez, does she have a point, you think?
Oh, she has a great point. And, you know, hey, if it's called socialism, let's call it socialism. I don't care what you call it. I think that's a great idea that one day this country will find a way to possibly lower the cost of higher education or eliminate the costs of higher education in some way, shape, or form. I think it's a great point. I think it's, you know, something that all of us at this table would sign up for. You know, we talk about the person who wrote into you, the single mother who, you know, went through the FAFSA process and didn't get aid and you know, has probably made the right decision to go forward with higher education and, you know, unfortunately accumulate that debt. But boy, if we could find ways to mitigate that debt or wipe it out, I think that'd be great for all of us. Because when you hear a profile like that, when you hear a scenario like that, I don't think you'll find any American who says that that person should have to pay their own way through school. At least 100% of the cost.
All right. So it is, Trudy, it is a discussion for a different day. But I will also say that last year on this program, we talked about Senator Elizabeth Warren's proposal to relieve some or all of college debt. And we are going to be talking in the weeks to come about the various proposals from presidential candidates about that. Because even on the Democratic side, for example, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have two very different proposals on paying for college, et cetera. So we are going to talk about that. But I've got a couple people from higher education here. So Gabe Trebides is the assistant director of the Access Opportunity Programs at SUNY Geneseo. He's a member of the college, the Rochester College Access Network. And, you know, what is realistic in improving the outcomes here in terms of loan debt, cost of education? It does feel like it's been on this trajectory that does not feel sustainable. Gabe, what do you think?
You know, I think it's one of the big things that I've really learned in my time in higher ed is there's always help. And I take into consideration one of the students in our program. She comes from a lower-income household, and she has not really paid a dime for school. And part of that was she didn't come in with the best grades, but she's doing great now. But really, she started to look at the resources. People can get scholarships from year to year. There's also ways of working to have your school paid for. She's a residence assistant. She is involved in so many different groups. One of the big ones for her is this group that she works for, or an intern for, that gave her a $10,000 scholarship. And when you look at that, especially at a school like a public institution like SUNY, any of the SUNYs, that's quite a chunk of a one person a year at an institution. So I think there are being a proactive student is part of it. But the other part is, of course, and I think it's the question we all come back to, is how to make that process a little bit easier. And in some ways, I almost wish there was an education class that in high school that would teach and prepare students for that. But quite often, there's not enough counselors to help. So many students try to get into the college process. And this is why one of the events like FAFSA Fest, where we do have that individual attention, can be beneficial to the students in the city.
Let me get Robert in Fairport, wants to weigh in as well. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think one thing that might be missing here is that there just doesn't seem to be any price competition between most colleges. The pricing is very opaque. A lot of colleges will have a list price, but that bears no resemblance to the actual price that students pay. There's a lot of colleges out there, and it just seems like there's a complete absence of price competition. And I think that there's almost no focus on trying to bring the price of college down. It just seems that we have resigned ourselves to the fact that it's always going to go up. I think people should be given a realistic idea of what do people actually pay when they go to that school, and that should be a requirement before you apply. That number should be out there.
Yeah, Robert, thanks for the phone call. I know there's a lot of agreement from our listeners just based on the emails I'm getting about return on investment and, you know, should we be bringing in young students if they're not getting a full ride? So what I want to do is kind of use Robert's comment as a springboard to continue the discussion on FastFest. Let's get a short break, and we'll come back with our guests, take more of your phone calls and your comments as well, and we will talk about return on investment, understanding the cost. You know, I had a number of emails saying, is the message that you need a full ride to make this work, or you should only go to a state school, or you're not going to be able to afford a private school, particularly for families from either impoverished backgrounds or really feeling like this is not something they can afford. So we'll address some of those points as well and talk to our panel when we come back here with Pat Brous, Executive Director of the Rochester Education Foundation, Gabe Iturbides, the Assistant Director of the Access Opportunity Programs at SUNY Geneseo, Cortez Jones, an RCSD graduate and now a branch manager for ESL Federal Credit Union, telling his story, and Kim McKenzie Mabry, the Interim Dean of Academic Services and Affirmative Action Coordinator for Monroe Community College and a Rochester Education Foundation board member. Short break, and the discussion continues next. Coming up in our second hour, the team at Rochester Clinical Research says there are new studies about migraine that we need to know about. New information about prevention and treatment. Dr. Joseph Mann joins us in studio to talk about migraine and what we all should know about what works and what doesn't. That's next hour on Connections.
Jhumpa Lahiri won a Pulitzer Prize for her writing in English. So why did she decide to write her latest book in Italian?
I think what is so attractive to me about this path in Italian is that no one expected me to do it.
Jhumpa Lahiri on Defying Expectations on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Who should be going to college is not a perfect, you know, question with a perfect answer, and you're not going to get a perfect answer, at FAFSAFest or in your aid offices at school. That's for parents and students and families to decide. FAFSAFest is designed to help students and families get the forms in, do it, get it done, do it fully, and make sure that you get exactly what you're entitled to when it comes to financial aid. So FAFSA stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid, and there are a number of events coming up here. They already had the first one on January 31st. The next FAFSA Fest event is noon to 3 this Saturday at the Sully Branch Library. Then the following Saturday, February 20th, that's out at the MCC Brighton campus from 9 to noon. Maplewood Library on Tuesday, February 23rd, Maplewood Library from 5 to 8. Also 5 to 8 on Wednesday, March 9th at the Phyllis Wheatley Library. And finally, Thursday, March 24th from 3 to 6 at the MCC Damon City campus. So those are the events coming up. You can find, I think, the full list of events online, right, Pat?
Yes, rochestercan.org.
Rochestercan.org, and CAN standing for College Access Network. So rochestercan.org for the full list of events there. And as they said earlier, you know, it really is aimed at city school students. Is not exclusively for that. And as you've said, Pat, you see people from all backgrounds, yes?
Absolutely. We found last year, which was the first year we did this is a universal need. It's really challenging for a lot of families.
Okay. I'm going to work through some more of the audience feedback, listener comments. Alicia sends a note and just says she's concerned about more than $1 trillion in loan debt, and as much as FAFSA can help, we're still talking about very big sticker prices at most institutions. Is it worth it? And what are kids getting counseled when they go to events like FAFSA Fest? So again, Pat, I doubt you're going to tell a parent you should send the kid.
Yeah,
here.
We don't counsel families. Do you whether it's a wise
right.
decision to go to college, we don't even look at transcripts. So we're not admissions people. But I will say that from our perspective, our focus is kids living in the city. And there is just the national debt issues are significant. College debt is significant. But it is higher education is one of the most well-documented routes out of poverty that we know of. We know that this is a terrific way to elevate young people and their families out of poverty. There aren't that many routes. I mean, in Rochester, we're really looking at how do we change some of the challenges we have. But I would never be someone to say, you want to go to college, don't go.
Well, Cortez, for you, Cortez Jones is a Rochester graduate, now branch manager for ESL Federal Credit Union. You look back on what you did. For those asking about should you only go if it's a full ride, et cetera, did you graduate with any debt? Was it all paid for?
No, I graduated with debt.
Okay, all right.
I'm still paying on it, but I did get aid as well. So, the way things worked, I went to SUNY Geneseo. The way things worked is, I got some help for tuition, but the costs for staying on campus and getting that experience as a student, I had to, take loans out for, and that's what I'm paying for. I'm proudly paying for those expenses. But again, I think I knew about that, going into this deal, and that did not discourage me from going forward.
Well, you say you knew about that. You obviously did a lot of work, and you had some help. You had some helpful people around you, adults around you in various settings. I do think about what Robert and Fairport said, and I think we've got to do a little bit better job about sort of financial literacy in general in this country. Do you think?
I agree. I mean, I work in the financial services industry. Even coming here for our panel discussion, I had folks coming up to me saying, I've got questions about the FAFSA, it's some of which are very similar to what folks have written in and called in about. So I think it's very important. But, here's another thing. I'll give a real life example of some of the financial literacy that needs to take place. So, I went through the process for FAFSA. I, was awarded, some funding for tuition. I had to take out loans for living on campus. Well, come, October of the fall semester and come February, March of the spring semester, I got these refund checks. I think that is extremely dangerous for folks who are still going to carry on outstanding loan debt to be given refunds. I think there needs to be something in the process, to sort of move that money over to, deteriorate that debt down the road.
In other words, there's a risk there. You put cash in students' hands. There's
absolutely
a risk it's gone. So.
Absolutely. And in my experience, just being real about the situation, most of the students who were awarded some help from the FAFSA are typically going to be your students who get refunds at that time of the year. So instead of going out and doing shopping and buying things, why don't you allocate that money to the debt that's coming down the road?
Were you able to do that?
I didn't. That's why I'm paying on it. But that's why I'm here, to give that experience so everybody can learn these things. I didn't have that. I didn't have anybody to tell me about that. So I got that money and I said, great, I'll use it to buy books and I'll use it for the summer and so on and so forth. So I didn't make the right decision. Thank goodness I don't have a ton of student loan debt like some of my friends do. But this is a way that we can deteriorate and start to bring down that student loan debt number that we talk about with some of our students.
Yeah, I see. So for the listeners, and we'll get Bud and Charlie, we'll get to you in just a second. For the listeners who've either called in or written in about various parts of this process, some saying absolutely worth it and others saying worth it but frustrating or et cetera. We're not here, with a perfect fix for it. Pat's not here because we have she's got the control to fix the system. It's living within the system as it is, making sure people know what's out there. And then Cortez, I think that is such an important point that you're making about if you're getting refunds, if you're getting help, make sure you're using it for what it's supposed to go toward. And Gabe, that would worry me. His story there would worry me because then it makes me think, well, is that the most efficient way to help students, to help alleviate debt? Is that really what we should be doing?
I think in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. And as he was telling his story, I started to smile a little bit because I can tell you how many students have decided to go and buy a PlayStation 4 instead of putting that money towards something more useful because it's exciting. All of a sudden, they have money that they see as not being you know, just something that the government decided to give to them. And it's because they're just not educated enough on that. And I remember that just being an 18-year-old freshman and somebody said, here's $200 extra. I didn't really want to buy an extra book.
I am not holier than anybody. Are you kidding? Absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, it's discipline, it's life experience, it's maturity, and not everybody is right. Has the combination of all those things to make the best decision with those dollars.
Agreed. Okay. Agreed. And then there are students who really need that money. There are students who really utilize that money correctly, and you see it. I see it on the campus every single day. But again, we want to be able to. I think one of the big things, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, but that education has to come from somewhere, and maybe it's something, and there are entrance loans, entrance interviews that are done, but I think sometimes students are just excited about being on college campus that you throw a million different things at them, and they really only retain, you know, do I have everything I need to do?
Sure.
Be a college student come Monday's first class.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Kim?
And so I think, too, different circumstances, different students. At MCC, I see a lot of our students are not necessarily spending it on unnecessary things, but they're using it for their cost of living. They're paying their rent because they're no longer working full time. They're paying child care or paying back child care because they don't receive that money for quite a few weeks into the semester. So, I mean, I did that when I was a student. When my refund check came, it helped me to pay some of the outstanding bills that I was behind on because I was in school full time. And then it helped pay that babysitter, what I owed from, you know, the past couple of weeks and forward for the next couple of weeks. And so I think, you know, I experienced that with a lot of our students at MCC now. It's that they can't save that money for the future because they're really using it to help them to be able to attend college.
And I don't think anybody would begrudge an MC student or any student anywhere in those life circumstances,
right.
Cost of living, making sure that bills are paid. Mm-hmm. So when a refund check comes, I understand that. I think the larger point that Cortez is making that I really take home here is just that students at least need that counseling to say, if you've got those bills to pay, that's your life and you've got to take care of them, okay. But if you don't, a PlayStation 4, you know, a new, you know, whatever it is, new duds, whatever you want to think about, maybe not the wisest way to spend those checks when it comes in because, you know, I didn't have that probably financial literacy, and a lot of students don't. So let me get Bud and Charlie has been waiting to weigh in. Go ahead, Bud.
Hey, I want to answer the question about is it worth it? I'm 76. I went to the University of Rochester, started in 1957, and graduated in 61. When I got to my senior year, the summer before, my dad told me he didn't think they could handle it anymore. And it was a case where my mother had taken on a part-time job, pretty much 30, 40 hours a week, but it's called part-time then. And everybody was helping me, and I went to the guidance counselor. I said, I think I'm going to have to take a year off. And he asked what was the problem. I told him. He made a phone call, and I had a full tuition for my senior year. Now, the situation has changed a lot since then. But when I graduated, I had to take out a loan for $6,000 to pay off the last that I'd owed. Is it worth it? I've had a very rewarding career. I started a new business in Kodak. I've started a new business out of Kodak. Without my education, I wouldn't have even known how to start that. And I want every young person to realize you never quit educating yourself. You have to get the degree. And you do not learn, even back in those days, you learned a lot in high school, but you do not learn enough to do the things that I've done. And I am not exceptional. There's a lot of people, older people, who are very appreciative of their college experience, not only in learning, but learning how to live and act on your own and deal with others. So that's, I'd say, it's a no-brainer. It's worth it.
Bud, thank you so much for the story and the experience there. And I saw a lot of smiles around the table. Cortez, you and Bud are a little bit different in age, but you know he's saying it's worth it. And look at the life that he's been able to lead and the career he's been able to put together. And you were smiling.
Sure. So many examples I can point to in my 29 years of life here. you just love hearing those stories. And that's my story. Like I said, I'm proud to pay my student loan debt back. I wish I didn't have to pay it back with interest at this point in life. There could have been a better process, possibly, but that's okay. Life is great. I've been able to use my degree and everything that I have learned in college to the best of my ability, and I wouldn't change it if I had to do it again.
Well, the Dean of Admissions at Queen's University of Charlotte, North Carolina, is listening online right now, and Costa sends us an email and says, "Hello, Evan, just a comment. There's so much anxiety associated with the admissions process, with most of the emphasis placed on finding the right college and getting in. There needs to be more emphasis on how to pay for it, so I am pleased to hear that the panel is discussing how to pay for it and the importance of financial aid. I think it's important that colleges partner with school districts and community-based organizations to host financial aid workshops to help families complete the FAFSA and understand how this process works. Tell them, keep up the good work." So that's coming from a listener in Charlotte. So thumbs up, Pat, and the team there for putting FAFSA Fest together there. Let's see here. I just want to grab a couple of other ones here. Jill, for listening down in Hector on 89.5 FM in the Finger Lakes, WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio. Jill writes to us and says, "As with single-payer health care, Americans act as if free college for everyone's a new idea. We need only look to all the other countries that have it to see a multitude of working models for what we could implement. We need to catch up with everyone else in the world." Again, that's Jill in Hector. Thank you, Jill. CT writes to us and says, "Make sure you let parents know that the Parents Plus loan is their loan, not the student's loan." I don't know. That's not my area of expertise, a lot of layers there. Yeah, I don't know much about that one, but thank you there. And there was one other. Let's see here. Anne Marie just sends us kind of a long note saying that they've got a junior in college in Virginia, and we could not move forward with registering her without at least filling out the FAFSA. We're not eligible for financial aid because of our combined income, and my husband felt the information was a little too invasive and cumbersome, especially knowing that we would not be getting anything. But she says, just felt like it was a frustrating process to have to go through it, knowing there would be nothing on the other end there. I don't know how common that is, it does sound like, again, not a perfect process, and we're trying to work within the system. I guess that's part of the larger point here this hour, isn't it, Pat? You're not here to fix the system, you're here to work within it.
yes, indeed. I wanted to point out, one thing I wanted to say is on our website, rochestercan.org, there's a lot of information about how you borrow money and thinking about how you pay it back. And I think, again, a lot of times students think about what happens on the front end, but they don't think about the paying back. So, you know, I think there is a lot of room for offering advice. And also the family that mentioned their student is in Virginia.
Yeah.
Even those issues are big, too. If you don't have a lot of money, sending your child to school far away, all of a sudden you have those travel issues. You have so I think sometimes what people really have to take a very big picture of what potential college opportunities are, because it does, the money, the cost adds up so quickly.
Aaron writes to us on Twitter, "Helping people apply for FAFSA is very valuable work, but I'd caution that loans are not aid. In fact, they can be very expensive." And I think that's agreed. I mean, we all definitely understand that. When we talk about financial literacy, we could definitely use, I could probably just as well as anybody, but especially an 18-year-old college-bound high school senior, just a conversation about what interest and compound interest means and what it looks like down the road. Because Cortez was saying, wish you didn't have interest on those loans. When you, who's 17, except for a small slice of our population, and understands that process, right? But Cortez, let me sort of wrap up with you here, because, you know, you're somebody who's telling the story, first generation, went through the process, and now here you are doing wonderfully. You are a sort of a proud endorser of the whole concept here. And Pat talked about not only financial aid for any family who needs it, but also as a way out of poverty. If you can get the aid, and if you can get yourself to higher education, the numbers are pretty good. What are your thoughts there? Let's leave it there. For when you think about the families, we all knew families growing up who were also in poverty. What would you say you know, to people who want that way out?
I mean, you have to do it. You know, if you make the decision that you want to go to college, that you want higher education, again, this is a part of the process. And it's not just about the funding, the aids, and the loans. I mean, just like Kim talked about, it could be about a scholarship opportunity that we entrust, you know, our higher education facilities to monitor, to seek those opportunities for folks who might need it. So it serves many purposes. And I think if you have made the decision that you're going to send your student to a higher education facility, this is a part of the process and it should be completed.
I think it's well said. And look, as the host of this program, I don't endorse, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I understand the frustration with the rising cost of higher education. But I think, you know, Gabe and Kim will tell you, Pat will tell you, when they meet families who almost gave up, almost as Gabe's family did, and then pushed through and got aid, it can change things. If you get the education, if you know what it entails going in, if you can find a way to make sure you're not buried in loan debt for decades to come, there's an opportunity. And FAFSA Fest is underway February 13th. That's this Saturday. The Sully Branch Library, noon to 3, open to the public. But if you can't make that one and you want to see the list of other events, rochestercan.org, rochestercan.org. Pat, thanks very much for putting this panel together. Great to see you again.
Thank you so much.
Cortez, good luck to you. Great storyteller, man. I really appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank Absolutely. You. Absolutely.
Thank you very, very much. And Kim and Gabe from Higher Education, great to see you.
Thank
More
you.
Connections Thank you. Next.